This one's hard. This one's really hard for me because some of my favorite Indiana caving stories involved this guy, and he talks about him in this interview. And I, the only time I ever met him in person was to do this interview. And when you hear the interview, it almost sounds like we know each other, but we didn't. I just read about him in trip reports and the 2007 National Convention Guidebook, where you can find a great article that he wrote called The Saga of Easter Pit, but we talk about it in this episode. Glenn LeMasters passed away. He was only 70. He was only 70. He died yesterday. He had dementia. He was having trouble remembering some things even when we were talking a few years ago. But I edited all that out because that's what I do. And what a great guy. He was very important in the founding of the Indiana Karst Conservancy. He was a director on the IKC board in the late 80s through the early 90s. He volunteered a lot, went caving a lot, and drew some great maps. Today we remember Glenn LeMasters. I love this story about you sneaking into Little Wyandotte.
I do too.
With your friend?
I'm telling him that I like that story. I want to tell that story.
Well, yeah. So
I'm a rebel at heart, no matter in what area I'm a rebel at heart.
Yeah.
If you tell me to turn left, I want to go right. You know, just my nature, I guess.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, some people would say that you're a contrarian then.
There you go. I like that word better.
There you go. So tell me about that.
Well, got interested in caves when I was in the 50s on vacation. And then my dad took me, a friend of mine, Reggie, down to Wyandotte Cave after the state bought it. We did the tour in Big Wyandotte Cave, and Dad wanted to take a break. So Reggie and I went down to the back entrance to Little Wyandotte. And what we found was, is a way we could squeeze our little butts through, and we did. And as soon as we got in, we heard a crew of people coming. We found a place to hide, and we hid the whole way while the leader and the tourist went back out. It was the back door. And we waited till they went out, and then we got out the same way we got in, just because we were little.
And so they didn't find you?
They didn't know we were there.
They didn't know you were there? You just waited and hid out while they passed by? That's the most fun as a kid when you're just, you know, you're just...
We were kind of scared, but...
but that's part of the adventure.
As soon as we saw the coast was clear, we took off and fought each other to the hole, who gets to get out first. But,
that's enough to hook any kid, I would imagine.
It's a good remembrance, yeah.
So was that the first cave? Or was Mammoth the first cave? Because you talked about Mammoth, too.
Mammoth Wood.
Well, Little Wyandotte was your first wild cave if you were crawling
Yeah, I guess you could call it that.
Did you have little flashlights, or did you just kind of go in as far as the sun hit and just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, they had lights on. It's a small cave, really.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that story.
So you were pretty young when you applied for NSS membership.
I just had this passion growing, and I wanted to know more, and so I filed this application. And when I opened up the letter and said no... I remember ripping it up, throwing it in the trash, and to heck with them.
Well, that didn't last real long.
No, it did not last real long, right.
You have a 16,000 NSS number, so you've had it for a while.
It was in the 80s. Well, they call it the life, whatever it is.
The life member?
Life member.
Yeah.
I was in my 30s.
You became a member of the NSS in the 80s, but you discovered the... Migrato, the CIG, in the 70s.
Yes.
Early 20s. You were in your early 20s.
Yes.
Started going to all the meetings.
Yes. Didn't miss a one. Every Sunday trip after the Wednesday meeting, I would be there on it.
Yeah.
Spent many nights at Dick Blintz's barn and down in that area. I don't know what my first wild cave was. Maybe Buckner's. I imagine.
Classic.
Yes. And just go down there and hang out and made friends with other cavers and rigged ropes and systems to use.
Mm-hmm. Did you visit all those Garrison Chapel caves?
I spend the weekend at the barn and go to all the caves? I have, yeah, one time or another.
What were some of the harder trips that you did? Like how did you build up your stamina in those years back in your formidable 20s?
I'm not sure I remember the name of the cave. there's a spring cave that has an upper level entrance, and it's a tough entrance, not the entrance itself. The King Blair, that's it.
King Blair Cave. Yeah, which pretty much connects to Buckner, more or less. I mean, not physically. You can't get through it, but hydrologically.
The spring that it connects to.
Yeah.
So I'm with Dean Meyer and his dad, Vern, and Dan Welling. May he rest in peace. Mm. And I didn't know these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They ran me to death.
And you're putting your life in their hands.
we're like lost three or four times. And Dan would do out and do the research or the searching, and we'd just sit and talk. And of course, my concern was, are we lost?
Like lost? Like bad lost?
Yeah. It turned out to be one of my favorite caves to do that through trip.
And you'd hang out at the barn and spend whole weekends there. And this was the barn at the Buckner property where everybody went.
Yeah.
The Spelio spot, as so many people called it. Did you do the vertical thing out of the hayloft in the barn so many people did?
I'm going to mention that, but yeah. My first time on rope was Porter Cave, and Bill Tozier, who you know, was my mentor. I used his gear, and he had a rack, but it was gold line.
Mm.
You've heard how gold line could stretch.
Yeah.
Scared crap out of me, but I went down, and we didn't climb. We didn't teach anybody to climb back out, but that was my first drop on a rope.
Well, how long is that drop? I've actually never been to Porter Cave. I've only heard about it. I mean, what is it, 50 feet?
I think it's only like 30.
30 feet?
I don't remember.
This is beautiful waterfall. It flows out of a nice cave entrance.
Yeah.
And it just
The CIG used to go there all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, we still have cavers, members that go there. I don't know what the status is. Private land, I know, but I think the landowners are friendly to certain cavers. Maybe we'll try to get a trip going out there. Who knows?
It'd be good. I'd go for old times' sake, if nothing else.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a nice cave, too. Porter's Cave is.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah. I've just never been. Just never made it out there. Close one to Indianapolis geographically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real close to, where I live, too. But
so when Bill was here, he talked a little bit about the Riverside incident. I mean, he wasn't there. Yeah,
I know.
He wasn't there, but you were.
But it's all his fault.
And I read the account. What was it, posted in the BIG newsletter? Who wrote it, Keith?
CIG too.
And the CIG as well. Who was it that wrote that?
Lynn Miller.
And he has a great sense of humor.
He does.
It's
and it
full
was,
of humor.
It was extremely well written when Keith sent it to me after he dug it up. I thought, oh man, this is great. And then when I found out I was going to talk to you and get a firsthand account, I got real excited. So
we probably all have different stories to tell.
I'm sure.
But they're all the same, but just changed, I guess. All I can say is I thought I was gone.
Well, I'm sure you all did.
I was ready to meet my maker. Not that I'm a big believer, but I talked to him a couple times.
Well, yeah.
And there was grown men crying out and yelling to God and just, moving as fast as we can while that water was chasing us. And
6 inches of water in like 3 hours or something
like
that? That
was what they said from outside. 6 inches of rain and fell in 3 hours' time.
So let's back up mid-70s. Yeah. This is a cave called Riverside Cave in Indiana. And looks like four of you were in there. Lynn Miller, Dean Meyer, Mike Gum. Oh, and Pat O'Connell and you. So five guys.
Yeah.
And
some people think Larry Wade was with us. He went down with us, but he didn't have a wetsuit, so he just didn't go in. And I want to mention his name because of something else later.
Yeah, yeah. So you went in, and you were gonna do what? You were gonna do some survey. You were gonna find something.
I'd been to the end of the cave as we knew it at the time was called the Y Room. I had been there with Bill before. I think Lynn and I had been there also, and these other cats went with us, and we just were going to go back just for fun, I guess. I don't remember having an agenda.
Yeah.
We had gear to survey, I think, if we got lucky, which we did. And Lynn went through and yelled, and we all went through his big borehole with some gypsum, and crazy. It was just, wow, one of those moments I'll never forget.
Yeah, you get in there, and it's like you've... Mm-hmm. Was this after the crawling? There was like 2,000 feet of crawl, like 1,000 feet of belly and 1,000 feet of hands and knees, and you get back to this cool place.
About 3,000 total. 1,000 of walking, 1,000 belly, crawl, 1,000, and belly crawl, 1,000.
Yeah.
And you're at the Y Room. And we broke through it, or Lynn did, and we all followed him, of course, fighting each other so he can go next.
Yeah.
We'd seen everything we could see, and we knew we were going to come back.
Yeah.
So it was time to leave. We came back in the Y room, and we sat down. And Lynn was sitting over by the small crawlway. He says, "Look, guys, I'm damming up the water." And he lifts his leg, and I was sitting across from him, and the water just comes gushing. And all at once, it's like we didn't speak. Nobody said, "We need to get out of here." We all just started to get out of there as fast as we could. We didn't have to talk about it. It was obvious. And that's how it started. And
this was the belly crawlway?
Yes.
And you're going to go through 1,000 feet. You're going to jump into 1,000 feet of belly crawl that's got water gushing out.
It's beginning to get higher and higher. Yeah. Yeah. And
you're in your early to mid-20s at this point. So you're more than capable of moving through, and it's not like you're inexperienced. You know how to crawl and get the hell out, but
yeah,
man, that would scare the shit out of me.
It did me too. I think my shit's still laying back there. I bet all of us dropped one. I just remember hearing people crying out, "Oh, Dean, I lost my light," and I grabbed a flashlight, and I ain't going to go back. He's back. Quite a bit, and I stuck it in a mud bank. I said, "Get this light. Come right up here to this light. It's yours." And I took off, and he made it all right. And Pat O'Connell, just laid back individual and not probably as in good a shape as the rest of us. And he didn't show up at the – it was sumped. We couldn't get out.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the first one there, and I realized –
You had to wait several hours before you could actually get out of the cave.
And we kept yelling, Pat. "Are you coming, Pat?" And we're like, "Oh, no, you know, he's going to be floating down dead here soon." And here he comes, just nonchalant, just walking along like, "Here I am." So, yeah, we took refuge up on a shelf, up pretty high. And there's a good story attached to that. The water didn't get up over the ledge, but it came close.
Thankfully.
And we watched it, and we just tried to kill time. And didn't have much room to walk. Lynn and I walked for hours just talking to each other about stuff. We couldn't sleep. The reason I want to emphasize that part of the cave is in the year after is when the bigger storm came through that area and wiped out English, the town of English, practically.
Yeah.
And I wonder how the level got in the cave. So I went in there by myself after everything has died down.
And that ledge is kind of, you kind of go through the entrance and then you're pretty much right there,
you're
right?
Real close to the ledge I speak of, yeah.
Yeah.
And the water level, I could see, had gone up and over the ledge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been bad.
Oh. Well, and then, we all came out the next day and there was people down there with human chains in where the water exits to catch bodies.
Oh.
And, Bill Tozier, as you know him, he was elected to talk to families over the telephone. But anyway, bring it up.
Well, his account that he shared on the podcast was, "I know where they are. They're probably fine. They're probably waiting right there. But you being part of it, it seems a little more harrowing than his version of the story."
Yeah, he was certainly wasn't there.
He was optimistic.
He was being, that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
With the families, yeah,
And he ended up being right, but
he
still.
Did. Yeah. But you look at the flood from the year after, it's woo. And so we got out, and Dean's dad, Vern, was greeting us. And he started walking us out, and he stopped us at one point. He said, "There's all kinds of news people, police, and they're all out there, And he stopped us. He said, "I want you guys to know something. They have bags for all your bodies. Laid out, ready."
Oh my God.
I'll never forget that. I'm like, "Well, I hope I get a pretty
one."
They
had five body bags laying out there?
That's what he said.
Oh my God.
They just assumed, and it wasn't really a bad assumption, I guess.
Well, no, it wasn't, but
Bill knew there was a place that we could take refuge, and he was right.
Yeah, but
nobody else knew that, I don't think.
Why would you lay body bags out before you even know what the heck's going on?
That's what Vern said. I never saw the body bags, but...
Man, that's grim.
We were all pretty solemn and just wanted to go home.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Have a big hero's meal and get into a warm bed.
I think we drank a lot of beer that night, yes. But I'd been working with Bill a long time, trying to map the cave and all. And we eventually we went back in with Bill. Me and Lynn and Bill went in, and I think we did some surveying. And I think Lynn thinks we saw everything there is to see, and Bill agrees. I don't. I think it needs somebody, and I would love to get a young CIG-er to lead a group back there and see what you find. All you got
to
do is
think there's more to find.
I do.
Yeah.
You just had to have been there. I just do. I don't think they agree with me, but you know, if you don't find something the first time, go back. You may find it the second time anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I'd love to see. I've tried to get some younger guys interested, but they just don't seem to be.
Well, 1,000 feet of belly and another 1,000 of hands and knees is a hard sell.
This is a big borehole, and I'm not lying here. It's a big borehole. I can use the word big with all honesty. And but gypsum growing everywhere. And there's even a mud bank back there, and I put CIG in it. So there you go, CIGers. You go. There's some old man, he was back in there and he wrote that down. I was proud of this.
Well, it's high as the water gets, though, back there. I wonder if maybe that's...
Well, that's a good question. But we were in some dry areas back there.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So...
May still be there.
Yeah.
Let's go find Glenn's mud graffiti.
C-I-G. Yeah.
So, Charles Cave. Let's talk about Charles Cave.
Yeah.
One of the few significant caves in Washington County.
It is significant, and it's another one of Bill Tozier's caves that he worked on, and shortly in the entrance, big entrance, normally it's something. He had a dig to try to go around it, and I went in twice with him and put my wetsuit on and tried to find my way through, and I guess I just didn't have what it took. So somewhere in there, Keith got involved with me, and we've been best of friends ever since. And then a guy named George Brutchen, he's a CIG member, I think, and he made it through.
Ah.
That's why I call him the Gill Man. I call him Bathtub George. You know, we call those places bathtubs. I call him Bathtub George. Bathtub Brutchen is what I call him. And I followed right behind him. I'm like, oh, I'm right here. I think I had a hold of his hair or something. I'm coming right behind you. And then we got to another something. And he got to a point where I'm looking and I'm watching him, and it's a real belly crawl. And I said, George, I don't know, man, if something happens to you right in there where you're at, I don't know if I can come get you or not. Next thing I know, he pops up through a hole, and then he comes around, and I could see him. I could see his light coming through a hole into the water. We both talked about that and realized, he's the one that realized, I think you could get through here, Glenn, just come right straight instead of going the way I went and pop up that little hole. So it's a little hole about 2 feet in diameter full of water, and you just kind of close your eyes and go. And
that's brave stuff.
Well, he was on the other side. I knew he could reach down and grab my hair or something. But then we ran into borehole, and it was just, crazy.
And 3.5 miles of cave.
Yes.
Crazy.
We found a back entrance. Made good friends with the owner, Jim Wells, put in a back door. We found a back entrance to the cave. Surveying in the whole cave was just great. I remember one time we were surveying along, a lot of crawling, but then there's a borehole here and there, at least a walking passage here and there. I remember popping into a walking passage, and I yelled back. It was the three of us again, Keith, George, and I. Keith says, damn, when's this cave going to end? So, a side note to that story, we mapped it, and I did the map, and Jim Wells, up a little bit from his home, there was a piece of property they were going to put a housing addition in and a lot of septic tanks. And he wanted to fight that because they would all flow into the cave and towards his house.
Septic tanks, leach lines, it would just contaminate the groundwater.
Yeah, he called me and asked me if I'd testify in a court in Salem about my map showing that this exists, and I did so. And he told me it helped. It worked. They did not get their permits to put in the septic tanks.
Oh, well, great.
So I felt good about it, of course, but there's a caving story that served another purpose.
Kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about the Thanksgiving weekend when the sump was closed?
That's when we found the back entrance.
Oh, okay.
We went looking for back entrances, and that's when we made friends with Jim and that.
How did you eventually find out that it was that cave? Was it later or was it that day? You went in, found this entrance, and then you made it to a passage you
recognized? Oh, that's a good story.
Recognized?
Yes.
Yeah?
In a nutshell, yes.
That's something else.
Keith took off and went in front of me and George. And finally, he says, I think you need to come see this. And I knew what that meant. If Keith Dunlap says, I think you need to come see this, you, by God, needs to come see it. He does not exaggerate.
I would listen.
And me and George came through and we realized where we were finally. And it was fun.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
It was. It was cool.
Well, and so all the times, at that point, how many times had you been in that cave? And how familiar were you with the areas that you then were recognized once you came in that back entrance?
Not very far.
Not, okay.
Oh, 1,000 feet.
And so you just never thought to poke down that way where that new entrance was?
Yeah, we had in the cave, we found a dome that went up, and we heisted somebody up, and he crawled down that passage because it was a crawlway for a long ways. He got very close to the point where Keith first saw.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that that's where we were.
Yeah.
In the cave that we know. And actually, he and I went down that crawl all the way down to that pit and knew right then, this is the cave. We're here.
Yeah.
And then a lot of more trips after that. A lot of more Virgin Cave found after that. It was a good place to hang out.
3.4 miles when it was all done, huh?
Yeah.
You think any more is there? Or you think you pushed it all?
Well, like I said a while ago.
You're always hopeful, it seems like.
Now, there is a place in there. And I don't know if Keith agrees with me or not, but you know where there's a waterfall in one area in a big dome. And there's a way to go kind of around that and up into a different higher level. And I swear it's got bear marks in the wall.
Oh, yeah? The bear wallows, as it were?
It would take an expert to decide that.
Yeah, yeah. Just do a photo trip.
Maybe.
Show
maybe.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Interesting to know. I think it had a potential to another entrance at one day, and maybe that's where the bears came in. They didn't come in the way we came in.
No, of course not.
But old Jim became... And Jim's still kicking. I just saw him a month ago.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah?
He's a great guy. He was so nice to us and let us go in anytime. We didn't even have to knock on the door.
Old Still Pit. This was interesting.
Oh, it's a great story. So.
How'd they get down there? All right, let's talk about what it is. Let's talk about what you found down there.
Keith and I were down in Washington County doing what we do every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to head home. Stop at a typical burger joint that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about caves and old boy listening to us, Benny Compton, another friend that we made down there in that area, came over and talked to us, heard what we were talking about, had a story to tell us. And basically his father had always told him that back in the day when the revenuers would come in.
Prohibition.
Yes, prohibition. They threw a still down some hole. So he wanted to try to find it again and show us. Well, we were so excited, we just rented a hotel room, spent the night with our dirty clothes and everything, and came back the next morning. It was a winter day, kind of chilly, and we went out on this ridge by along the river down there, and lo and behold, we saw this hole.
Yeah.
It looked pretty deep. It turned out to be 60 feet deep. I mean, and Keith got the honors and went down first. And I'm up there with Benny, and Keith yells, and I'm like, huh? What? You could hear him. It looks like remnants of an old still or something like that. I said, Benny, did you hear that? He's just ear to ear smile.
Yeah.
We mapped it. I got my chance to go down. We called it Old Steel Pit.
You got to name it. That's cool.
It's a nice 60-foot drop.
Yeah, yeah.
For Indiana.
Well, so when I read this little blurb that you shared with me, I thought maybe they had set up down there. And I was going to be like, how the hell did they get down there?
He said his dad always told him they threw their steel down some hole. So the revenueers couldn't find him. He was just tickled to death. And Benny and I became, and he became friends with all of us. I'd stop at his house, and he smoked like a fiend, though. He'd get, put up cigarette smoke and sit and talk with him. He introduced us to a lot of other landowners that had caves. Small
gold,
ones.
Gold mine.
Yes.
The gold mine, this guy.
And then we started looking for a cave that we knew would feed out Big Springs.
Yeah.
Which is a huge spring down there in that area. Didn't find anything, but thought we did in a few places. We found a cave called Honeymoon Cave, and I don't know why we called it that. Save my soul. I don't even know. But we called it Honeymoon Cave.
That's a two-mile cave.
Yeah.
It's big cave, yeah.
Pretty much wetsuit all the way.
I guess if you're looking for something that feeds into Big Springs, you're gonna have to put up a little water.
I think I've owned two or maybe three wetsuits in my life, or at least one that's been patched like crazy. And made friends with a family called the Purleys. He had a big steam hole out in his pasture. We just died to go. We want to go look at it. We've looked for an entrance into Big Springs for a long time and haven't found one. Mm. Found some other caves in searching.
Yeah.
One that comes to mind, even though it's the other side of the river, Magic Kingdom Cave. Probably the worst bathtub I've ever been through, and I think Keith agrees. I think he almost drowned one time in there. And
I would imagine your scale for the worst bathtub ever is probably the worst bathtub ever. So tell me about that.
Because it's tight.
Yeah.
You don't have
it's
a
like
lot
belly
of,
crawl, right?
Yeah, you don't have a lot of room to get your head tilted and kiss the ceiling. It has all kinds of cave inside, dry passages. Well, there was a place you had to climb up. We rigged a rope. I don't know, it was a couple of miles long, I think.
Yeah. You did a weekend where you kind of binged a bunch of the tag pits with Keith.
Yeah, we spent a week. Was it a week?
Or a week. It was a whole week. That's right.
Well, I think we, did all the classics. Spent a week doing it. And
yeah.
I guess I could say I've done a lot of the classics down there.
Classic pits or just or pits, caves as well? Like,
yeah, well.
Did you fantastic?
Well, that'd be down in Georgia, but we didn't go down there. Now, I've been there two or three times. I guess I could say I've done most of the classics in Tennessee.
Mm.
And there's a lot of them. And in Alabama, too. Just bounced the pits, really.
Yeah.
It? Yeah.
And in Mexico, too.
Yeah, I went. I got to go on an expedition once in the mid-80s or 86 or 7 or something. In the Sono de la... Ocotempa.
Ocotempa.
Dave Black and I and Holly, Dave's wife at the time, and my girlfriend Tina... And Greg McNamara went with us. Had to do a long hike to get to the village. It was a 400-foot pit followed by a 300-foot pit. And there was another one even yet to be found, but wasn't on that trip.
Wow.
The thing I remember the most about it has really nothing to do with caving. We had three white women with us.
Yeah.
And the villagers said, it's the first time they'd ever seen white women. And I just have never forgotten. I'm like, daggone, we're way out in the boonies, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. It's real rural where all those caves are in Mexico. I mean.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a long, rich history specifically. I mean, people across the country listen to this podcast, so I'm sure I'm going to get corrections, but there's a rich history of Indiana cavers going down to Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's, I mean, I... And I wasn't made aware of it until recently that, you know, a lot of the Indiana guys started going down there and then everybody else followed suit. And so that's really cool.
And some of the tag guys didn't like it because us Indiana guys were going down there.
Well, whatever. They got all the best stuff down there in tag.
The cave
we had to go find some cool stuff.
Yeah. And that's what that trip was all about. It was about a week long and I drove down there. Dave drove down there. Oh, we found this beach. Nobody was there. Sandy beach.
Yeah.
We went out and had races on the sand. Drag races.
Yeah.
With his truck and mine. On the way home, got to do Golondrinas.
Yeah.
Greg and I and Tina, Dave and Holly had vehicle problems and barely made it back to the United States. And we had a traveler with us, Alan Kressler from Georgia. And we all got to bounce Golondrinas.
Yeah. How'd you, were you using Jumars to get out?
Yeah.
I've heard of a lot of Indiana guys using knots coming out of colon drainage.
I think that was back in the 60s or
something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back when that was the only option.
Yeah.
That's got to be a hell of a experience.
It was. I have a lot of photos.
Did you just go to the bottom and come back out, or did you go to the little crack? Kind of went over to it.
We didn't just get off rope and get right back on.
Yeah.
Alan stayed. We had to leave somebody at the top.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah, of course. I've heard.
Yeah. And we were all in my truck at that time. And Alan's up the top first. He yells down, "What? These guys want money for where you park." And I'm like, well, give them some. Alan didn't carry much change with him ever, I don't think. It's dumb to have to wait.
Well, wait a minute. How'd they yell down to? Do you have radios or?
He yelled down the pit, and I could hear him.
You could hear him?
Yeah, he's calling my name.
1,100 feet away?
Knowing Alan, he was hanging over the edge by his toes, and he yelled. And I gave him some money, and they were happy.
Okay. Give him some.
Yeah, I'm down here in this cave. What are you talking about?
You figure it out, man.
Yeah, right. Then he got his turn to go down. It was just so great to do that. You know, everybody wants to do it.
Oh, God, I want to.
Yeah.
One of these days, I'd love to get down there.
Make a special trip if you have to.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, there's all kinds of stuff down there in Mexico.
There is.
Yes. I mean, there's a bunch of guys in the grotto that did a trip a year or two ago. They just went down and did all the classics. They did Golondrinas. Mm-hmm. They, you know, all kinds of big stuff they went and did down there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Batwing Cave.
Yeah.
And the gate.
Batwing Cave was a cave I'd been to many times back in the day. A 50-foot pit inside, and it had a lot of bats, and I'll try my best to tell this story in a polite way.
Only cavers listen to this.
Well,
you got a sympathetic ear.
Basically, the state of Indiana decided they're going to close the cave for the betterment of the bats.
Sure.
And I and Keith Dunlap and other cavers helped them do it. We were so naive. I say that in retrospect.
Well, you had the best intentions. You're like, all right, this will improve relations with the state, who owns a lot of land with a lot of caves.
Well,
and
I've learned since that's bullshit.
I mean, but in your naivete,
I felt so innocent. In my old age, I felt like I was just an innocent young man, didn't know what was going on. If I knew that they were going to lock that place up forever, which they have.
Well, of course you wouldn't have done it, but.
Oh, no.
But you didn't know at the time. You were just doing what you thought was right and what you thought would garner some favor from them.
Yeah.
For cavers. But anyway, so what ended up happening with Batwing Cave?
Nothing. I just wanted to complain about it to you.
Yeah. So you helped them put in a gate?
No, I'll tell you what I really want. Anybody that listens to this, say it's a younger caver that's new to, I want them to know that tore me up. And I didn't realize it till 30 years later. These people took advantage of me.
Of your goodwill.
I take it.
So what happened was they were like, hey, this is a bat hibernacula. A lot of bats live here. We want to gate this. Can you help us?
Well, there's another part of this story. A lot of bats don't live there anymore, and they can't explain it. They don't try to explain it. They're afraid to try to explain it. Could be there's some theories, and I have to admit I can't disagree with some of those theories, but I'd rather stick with my story. Those people didn't tell me, by the way, we're going to close this up, and you're never going to go in here again. So, but it's a nice cave, nice cave. It's a 50-foot drop. You want to do a drop, you know, it's cool.
Yeah. Nice. So it was a permanent gate and it's just done.
That's why I wanted to talk about Batwing Cave. I just want the world to know. I feel like I got
snookered,
for lack of better words.
Well, okay. So this will lead us into, before we started talking, I shared with you I like to read about caves. I like to read cave books and old guidebooks and whatnot. In the 2007 National Convention, it was in Indiana. There is an article in there about the saga of Easter Pit, as it were. And Easter Pit was this pit down in Harrison Crawford that, you know, they found some cave in, and it turned out to be an extensive system that then connected to, well, we'll let you take over. But, but that the article about that is just, that's light fun reading for me whenever I want to read a good cave story.
Well, thank you.
And that's why I love it. That you're sitting in that chair right now. And I love that we're talking tonight.
I didn't ask anybody's opinion. I wrote it and submitted it to the guy doing the book that time. And
yeah,
he liked it. So bingo, it went in print and I'm proud of it. And thank you for saying
yeah,
you
yeah.
liked it.
Yeah.
Interesting story. I mean, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, you know, I mean, this
I can only imagine
too good to be true. I mean, Easter Pit is not just a short little cave. It took a number of trips and efforts to find our way into Wyandotte.
Yeah. Wyandotte was the cave it connected to.
Yeah.
Which is a significant cave in Indiana.
Absolutely. Very. Yeah.
And historically and all, you know.
Oh, a lot of history. I remember listening to the podcast Greg did.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about how he likes to walk in there, just feel like he's with the Indians, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a big collector of.
Yeah, he's a big artifact guy.
Yeah, you know, but I can relate to what he's saying. It's kind of cool. Without a lot of detail, I'll be glad to share any with you if we can have time or you want. But I know when we made it into there, we knew where we were at.
Yeah.
And we had to be careful because we didn't want to get caught.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd time things and kind of know when the trips were going and when they weren't going.
This was at the time, this was in the early 90s, right, when you made the connection?
Late 80s.
Was it late 80s?
Yeah.
Okay. And so at the time, there were regular tourist trips, regular.
Yeah.
It was a show cave, essentially, owned by the state.
Yeah.
And at the time, there were regular tourist trips. Ever since Winds has happened, they've closed it, and they've only in the last few years been opening it up in the summertime.
Yeah.
So at the time, there were tourists coming through, and you didn't want to be too loud. You didn't want to be found.
Right.
Yeah.
But I remember going to the gate, and it was locked. It was probably 3 a.m. when we got there. I remember going to the gate, and Ted and Danny was with me, and Joe, and we just sat there and giggled. We did. And
so you went in Easter Pit and then essentially did through trip out the Wyandotte Gate or to the Wyandotte
Gate. To the gate. It was locked. We couldn't get out.
Yeah, you couldn't get out, but you still just, you know, it was still
this
just
why
like,
we
this
just
is
sat
it.
There and giggled.
This is it, man.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a lot of trips after that.
Yeah.
A lot of, found a lot of virgin cave within the cave. And I have to give Dybul most of that credit for finding
Danny Dybul.
And I mean, I could go on and on with stories. Easter Pit was an unbelievable find.
Yeah.
Probably the best I've ever had an opportunity to be in with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you'd consider that to be your the crown jewel of your caving achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Probably, yeah. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. A lot of trips, long trips. Like I said, found some new passages.
Mm-hmm.
We mapped them. I'm going to skip ahead real quick to 2009.
Well, let's skip to 2000. What was it? 2001.
Well, when
you kept the secret for over 10 years.
Oh, yes, we did.
So you surveyed and mapped it all, and you had it all ready, and you're like, all right, we'll hang on to this. And then we'll present it to the state when we feel like we're ready, which was more than 10 years later. This was like 2001 or something like that, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm leaving that whole thing.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure we covered it because
we didn't know what to do.
Yeah, you didn't. Well, I mean, you got to think about what to do.
We called on old Richard Powell, the first surveyor of the cave since, you know, when the state bought it.
He wrote Caves of Indiana. Is that right? Was that the book he wrote?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he knew people that knew people or whatever, and he... The short story is we disclosed what we'd done, what we'd found.
Yeah. Did you figure the state would want to know?
Yeah. I have regrets, but we did it.
Sure.
And Richard took care of all the politicking, and we were able to talk them into a 10-year ability to continue to go in a cave to work,
right?
I.e., look for more passage, because we found places nobody had ever seen, and
yeah,
they granted that to us. The map kept growing. I was doing the map. It was during that period of time. It was now into the 1990s, and my daughter was born. I didn't have to do nothing. I raised my daughter by myself since she was 4 years old. So my life in caving changed tremendously in that era.
This is hitting me right now because I just had, you know, my little boy about a year ago.
Yeah.
And my caving life is kind of taking a hit because of that. Yeah. But I couldn't be happier personally.
Exactly. You know? I would run in front of a moving train for that human being. Even when I was there when she was born, and I remember thinking, damn, this is what it feels like. I would lay in front of a moving train for this kid.
Yeah.
And she's 27 years old now. I've pretty much raised her all by myself and all through college. And she's married to a soldier, and they're stationed in Tennessee. Very proud of her. And I don't regret missing those days at all.
You got plenty of caving in before she came along.
To be in on the connection. You can't beat that.
No.
When you go to the gate and you giggle.
I can only imagine what that was like. So you work on this through the 90s.
Yeah.
And
then the map, I did a map and published it, and it was part of that guidebook that you were speaking of while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then came 2009-ish.
Yeah.
And without going in detail, Gordon Smith, caver, everybody probably knows his name, and others, found an extension that had never been found in Wyandotte Cave, to keep it simple. And they mapped it, but they didn't connect it in. And I had done the map, and Gordon gave me a copy, but I said, why didn't you connect it in, you know? And so I filed with the state of Indiana a permit request to go in and do so. That was about 2009. It took 6 friggin' years before they finally said yes. I filed every year with the help of Keith Dunlap. I mean, when I write, sometimes it needs to be cleaned up. I mean, cleaned up.
Sure.
He cleans it up for me. And,
understood.
Finally got it granted in 2017.
Hmm.
So we went in and got to see the new passage anyway, and we connected it in. So now it's on the map. My old map is now a new map with this passage that was found in 2009 or 8, whatever.
Wow, yeah.
That Gordon and his guys found.
Yeah.
And he's happy with it. I know Gordon is. So what's going to happen next with Wyandotte Cave, I don't know. You know, we got to go in and do that mapping last year.
Yeah, last year. Is that hard? I mean, was that section hard to get to? I mean, for such an historic cave.
It's a 2-hour hike in and 2-hour hike out. And
so it's just your borehole?
Yeah.
And then a little bit of...
There's a couple of crawls. We had to climb up a rope to get... a ladder, I'm sorry. To get to the new passage. And Keith was with me the whole time, practically, and he helped me get things done right. We had other helpers. And, by the way, Indianapolis required us to have an escort. You know, I called him the sheriff. He's going to keep track.
They come with you on the whole trip?
Yes. But it turned out to be the assistant manager. He's actually the manager of the Cape, and he and I are the bestest of friends.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
What a hell of a guy. He's so nice. Stanley. He trusted us, but he sent one of his people in, or he went in with us, and he knew why he was there, and we'd joke about it sometimes.
Yeah.
Some of his younger men went in there with us once, and we're taking a break in the crawlway. And, you know why you guys are here, don't you? No. Make sure us cavers don't do any digging. And they laughed.
So it sounds like the beef is with the state as a whole rather than the people, the operatives that they send along with.
Absolutely.
Faceless people that are making these weird decisions behind your back that you're frustrated with.
Made more than just one good friend. know, yeah. with Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
And his boss, Bob, we're even closer than we used to be. I think he helped this permit go through after 10 years,
yeah.
9 years or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I really do. At first, he didn't have time to mess with it, and he wasn't afraid to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe he came through and made it happen, and I told him that, and I thanked him for that.
Yeah. Other than just a general fascination with caves that you've had since you were a kid, what do you think it is about caving that, that kept you coming back so often?
I don't know, but I used to always say it kept me alive.
Yeah?
Because it.
What do you mean by that?
I ate it in the mornings, I ate it at noon, and I slept at it in a cave at night. I was married once. It caused a divorce.
Sure.
Back in the very early days, you know, I was gone all the time. We had an amicable divorce.
Yeah.
Had different paths that we wanted to take. I was gone all the time.
Yeah.
Bless her heart. But anyway, I was just hooked. And doing maps was fun. And mapping mm-hmm. was fun. And when you find Virgin Cave, it's just out of this world to me.
Yeah. That's something I have yet to experience.
It could be addictive.
Yeah, I would imagine. That's something I have yet to experience, and I'd love to someday, but...
Oh, hopefully you will. And
yeah.
If I can run across something that's possible, I'll give you a tip.
All right.
I just don't do it like I used to. I got arthritis in both of my knees, and I got other issues, and I just can't do it like I used to. With no complaints, though.
Are there ones that you can go back to, though? And of those, which ones do you like the most?
Good question. All of them?
Yeah. Just about anything. Any opportunity to get into a cave is a good one. That's a favorite.
Well, I certainly got my fill of Wyandotte in 2017 for a while.
That's good. It's a good one to get to go back to.
I don't need to go back in Easter. I've been there already.
10-4.
I don't need to go back in there for a long time. Everton's is one I'd like to go back into.
Mm.
Oh, there's a bunch of good caves down there. Sinking Foot is a cave that's monstrous, and there's a good story there I'd like to tell you. I think you'd like it.
Yeah.
Do you know David Black?
I know of him, and I've met him once or twice, but I haven't talked to him a lot.
I talked to him this morning. He needs to do this thing.
I'd love to have him on. I'd love to have Dave on.
I'll find a way to get you two together. You know, he lives down in southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
It is wet crawls, rope drops. Just it's a tough cave.
Mm.
He and I and Ted were going in for the umpteenth time, Ted Wilson. And he was bringing up the rear, and we get to this place where we kind of always stop, and Dave wasn't coming.
Mm.
And we actually argued about it. Like, we can't just go, you know. We had an agenda. We had a rope with us. We had a pit we were going to drop, and we had an agenda, so we didn't come here for fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's all
fun. I mean, it's always fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't do it, but still.
Yeah.
You're not just poking around.
So finally, we agreed that... I will go back and see what's going on with Dave, why he's not here. Ted will take the rope, and with my permission, I'm fine. You go ahead and drop that pit and see what you found, and then see you down at the stage stop like always at 4 a.m. or whatever. So I'm on my way back, and there's this real tight spot you have to kind of wiggle down into, 90-degree angle. You got to squeeze into a small crawlway. Dave was stuck. He's a big guy.
Yeah. Okay?
He was stuck. Feet were hanging down in there.
Mm.
And he was out of breath and energy. And he'd been trying to get his butt out of there for all the time. And he was wore out. I was able to eventually, you know, I had to do some contortions so he could push off of my back, but got him out. And he and I just sat at the top of that little hole.
Yeah.
And sat and just... didn't say anything to each other for about an hour. He was wore out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Out of gas.
Yeah. And Ted came back about 4 a.m. We were camped down at the stage stop. If you think about it, as I told Ted, do you know what would happen if I hadn't gone back?
You got to wonder.
Yeah. I mean, how are we going to get him up out of that hole? And we don't have a lot of room for leverage. I don't even want to think about it, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's Dave and I was talking this morning. We talk about that a lot. I say it's a good story. It's a story. I don't know how good it is. Cavers can get stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
And be in trouble. So it's good that you don't, you shouldn't go caving alone. How about that?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never done that before. You don't see me winking my eye here either, do you? But,
well, shoot. I mean, you know, look, it happens. I'm not endorsing it in any way, but mm-hmm. I mean, people have done it and people have written about it. I mean, hell, yeah. Greg wrote about it in his article about Two-Bit Pit going down there to stash wetsuits. You know, I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens if you're really into it.
We've all done it, I think.
But it's not recommended, folks. It's not recommended.
Exactly.
What about vertical? I mean, it sounds like you've bounced your fair share of pits, but it sounds like...
Well, I was interested at one time. I think I've done them all. it's just because, you know, at least in Indiana, and tag quite a few, but not all of them.
Yeah.
Got to do the classics. I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of the tag pits that you've done, which one sits with you? Which one do you was the highlight of that week that you took with Keith?
Oh Lord!
I mean, you did a lot of them that week. It sounds like you did just about everything in Tennessee and Alabama.
I remember the most, and I've talked to him about this. I don't know if he remembers it as well. Called Run to the Mill Cave.
Mm.
There's a
I've never even heard of that.
There's a big pit inside.
Hmm.
There's a kind of a bathtub you got to go through, and there was always a concern about using carbide lights in there because of gas from dead mice or something. I don't know. And I used carbide lights for many, if no other reason, it kept me warm when I wanted the warmth of the fire.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a good backup. Run to the Mill comes to my mind. And I don't know why. It just does.
It was just a good
trip.
There's
a big borehole at the bottom, and it's a nice cave.
Yeah. You said there's a big pit in there?
Yeah, in the cave.
How deep is that pit?
I don't remember.
Mm. Is it
100, maybe? And
nothing you're not used to from being an Indiana caver.
Right.
Yeah. Some of those big holes down there can be a little, I mean, they're just crazy when you think about it compared to what we have in Indiana.
Yeah, right. I've done, I think, all the big ones. And there's one I can't even think of the name of, but everybody's been there once or twice.
Mm.
You know, Steve Nelson used to go down there all the time.
Mm.
As far as the deepest drop, it's...
Golondrinus, right?
Golondrinus, of course, yeah. Got a great picture of... Tina and I climbed tandem. I was on top, which is not the best place to be, really.
No.
But there's a wonderful picture of us at the top. I'm getting ready to come over the edge, and she's right behind me, and we both looked like we'd just been terrified. You know, we just wore out. That's what it is.
But still, once you get 200 feet off the ground, and then you got another hour at least of climbing up. I mean, I can only imagine how that feels. It's like, God, if anything happens, we are goners.
Yeah, but I figured it wouldn't be any pain.
But you'd be well aware of it for
on the way down
for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a plane crash, you know?
Yeah, I used to always say that, oh, hell, the drop will kill you. Don't worry about anything else.
Well, yeah, but you'd know for a while you're about to, anyway.
Yeah, I think the rope is slipping. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Look at that rat.
What happened?
There's a rat up there eating it.
Or a local who's not happy we're here.
I've heard stories of some ropes being... Yeah. Thrashed with a
I've knife. I've heard them too. Anything else you want to share? This has been great.
No, I've made a lot of friends.
Yeah.
In the caving community.
It's a good way to make friends.
And it's,
go
it's,
through something you, weird like caving.
Yeah, and you think back on it, and again, I've always said caving has kept me alive. And it give me reason to wake up in the morning with a smile on my face.
Yeah, it's a spice of life. It gives a little spark to things.
Even after my daughter left for college, you know, I started caving again a little bit after that, by the way.
But I would imagine. It's therapy. It's therapeutic, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know it the first time. You just know you go home. Oh, the first time I went on it was one of them trips down in the barn area. mm-hmm. sore as can be, and like, oh, I'll never do this again. But you do it the next
you
week.
You do, yeah. Yeah. I remember the first time I took a Wayne trip. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a great Wayne trip. It wasn't even to like RPI. We just went to Camp 2 and came back out. It was a big group. It was miserable. And I got out, and I was like, I'm never going back to that damn cave again. Been back 5 times since, you know?
And the crawlway never stops.
The crawlway never stops.
The endless crawlway.
No. Next time I go, though, and I've sworn this, Bill Greenwald, and you know Bill, mm-hmm. the CIG, he's made this thing called the Crack Trapper, where you lower it and it allows you to get gear out that you may have dropped down a canyon or a crack or something.
Oh,
there's
yeah?
all kinds of stuff in that canyon at the end of that crawlway. And
really?
I think there's a nice pocket knife down there. The last 2 times I've been, I've seen it, and I'm like, I'm going to get that next time.
Maybe you could put a magnet or something on it.
He's got all kinds of little contraptions that you can stick to the end of it. It's just paracord with some stuff at the end of it that you can use cool. to hook and grab. He'll do a presentation on it and everything. It's hilarious. It's the funniest thing.
Yeah.
But anyway. Well, thanks, Glenn.
Well, thank you. I had fun. And my daughter will be glad I did this. I told her about it. She said, you got to do that. You got to do that. That's history, Dad. You need to do that. And it is. So I'm glad.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.